Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
It's showtime. It's go time.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills. Tonight on the show, we'll talk with Bills defensive tackle Corbin Bryant, coming off his best game as a Buffalo Bill, according to head coach Doug Marrone. Coming up at 8 o'clock, my partner on the Bills Radio Network, Mark Kelso, joins us to recap and review the first four Bills preseason games this year. And we'll get you set up for your fantasy football league with Jamie Eisenberg, the fantasy expert for CBSSports.com.
This place is pandemonium!
At the 10, at the 5, heads to the end zone, touchdown! DJ Spiller.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Yes, it's Tuesday night, and we're two nights away from another game. Can you believe it? Two nights away from another preseason game, the final, fifth and final preseason game coming up Tuesday night, the Bills and the Lions. Good evening. Welcome. We're broadcasting live from our studio at One Bills Drive. Still getting used to it here. 5 weeks at training camp. What did we do, 21, 25 shows or something, Jay Harris, producer Jay Harris out there? I added it up on the last night. I think we're up to about 21, 22 shows in Rochester over the five-week period.
Away from here?
21 in Rochester. I know there were three in Pittsburgh and
right.
one and in Charlotte.
Right, those? Yes.
Yeah, 25. Yeah, that's about right. Five weeks. It was great there, but we're glad to be back and still getting used to it. The routine, you know, we're kind of in a regular season mode here. The players are, too, with practice daily. And then they go through their, meetings and lifting. And they have their meals here. And it's kind of the regular season routine here at One Bills Drive. Let's talk with you about this preseason, about this football team, about this roster tonight. The phone lines open, as they always are, 803-0550, the number to call. Or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Anything at all about the Bills or the NFL is open for discussion. I'd throw this out there. Maybe you want to weigh in on this. As you know, the Bills made the quarterback move today. They released Thad Lewis, and they signed Jordan Palmer. It was reported last night, and we talked about it a little bit last night. But where are the Bills as far as backup quarterbacks now? And where are you with the backup quarterbacks the Bills have on the roster right now? How do you feel about what they have on the roster at backup quarterback? What do the Bills need in a backup quarterback, a backup for E.J. Manuel? Is that guy on the roster right now? What do you think? A lot of people think they need a veteran. I think that'd be nice. I mean, that was the plan. Doug Marrone kind of talked about that today a little bit, how the now almost a year and a half old plan to bring in Kevin Cobb and let him be the veteran, the steady hand behind E.J. Manuel. And that got fell apart when Kevin Cobb got hurt in preseason last year, so that didn't work out. And then they got through last year. You know, they saw, I think it was a year ago yesterday when they made the trade for Thad Lewis, brought him in. They also brought in Matt Leinart, you'll remember, a year ago, hoping to find a good, capable backup. I think they thought they had it in Thad Lewis. We'll hear what Marrone says about this in a moment or two. And Lewis did okay in his five starts last year, 2 wins, 3 losses. He did okay. But it wasn't a good training camp. It wasn't really a good offseason for Thad Lewis in terms of looking good in practice. And they're trying to get better. So that's what they did today and by bringing in Jordan Palmer. So is he the guy? Is he the veteran backup you need? He doesn't have a ton of experience, but he does have an interesting resume. We'll talk about this tonight. Jordan Palmer from his family background. Carson Palmer is his brother. Second of all, his experience working at quarterback camps for a while now, the Elite 11 quarterback camp in particular. He's been around quarterbacks and quarterback schools and quarterback camps and is recognized as a guy who, although he hasn't had a whole lot of chances to play in the league, he has a good background in terms of getting others ready to play in the league. And does that help with Jordan Palmer or with E.J. Manuel? So that part makes his background interesting, I think. I think that makes his resume interesting, Jordan Palmer. He does want to play. Certainly he wants to play. He wants to play as much as he can, and he's going to get a chance to play Thursday night. Coach Marrone said today that Jordan Palmer will probably get the bulk of the work Thursday night against the Detroit Lions. It's a tough spot for him to be in, isn't it? to come here today to get a crash course in the playbook. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a very simple playbook, a very pared-down playbook, list of plays that he'll have to work with. But it's still a tough spot, not having worked with this group, this coaching staff, this system before. So he is. He told me today he's going to be here till midnight tonight and probably be right back at it for another 12 hours plus tomorrow, the eve of the game, getting ready to play Thursday night. And is he the guy? Coach Marone would not commit to him today as the backup going into the season, but does he have the kind of background you'd like to see in a backup quarterback for E.J. Manuel right now? We are, 8 days away? No, 9, 10 days? 12, 11, 13, 11 days away from the start of the regular season, and the backup quarterback job is still out there, still up for grabs, it would appear. Give us your thoughts on that. Give us your thoughts on what the Bills should be looking for when it comes to a backup for E.J. Manuel. Maybe you have somebody in mind, realistically, somebody who might be available in the next couple of weeks or so. Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. What should the Bills be looking for a backup for E.J. Manuel tonight? And is that guy on the roster? Is it Jordan Palmer? Is it Jeff Toole? The other two quarterbacks on the roster. 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We'll get to the calls in a second. Before we do that, one other roster move that you may or may not have been aware of, and this just happened in the last hour. The Bills have claimed and were awarded a punter off the waiver wire, Jordan Gay, just released a couple of days ago Sunday by the Carolina Panthers. He came into the league as an undrafted free agent with Carolina a year ago, did not make the team. He spent time with the New York Giants in addition to the Panthers, native of Kentucky, a product of Center College. He handled kickoff and punt duties for the Panthers during this preseason against the Bills. He missed an extra point, one of those 33-yard extra point attempts. He missed it against the Bills in that game a couple of weeks ago, but did handle kickoffs and punts. 4 kickoffs against the Bills in that game on August 8th, 2 to the end zone for touchbacks, 1 to the 4-yard line, 1 onside kick. Jordan Gay, a kickoff specialist. They cut Dustin Hopkins yesterday and brought in Jordan Gay today. Kickoff specialist and a punter. So the roster very much in flux. As we get through the first cut down, the cut to 75, the deadline was 4 p.m. today. And with the Kiko Alonso move, putting him on non-football injury list, then the Bills are right now at 75. And then they have to make 22 more cuts by Saturday at 4 p.m. And then the following day, they get to establish a 10-man practice squad. The roster very much in flux for the Buffalo Bills. Let's talk some quarterbacks, though. Backup quarterbacks for E.J. Manuel. What should the Bills be looking for? Who would be your ideal? And is that guy on the roster right now? 803-0550, the number to call, or from outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Mark in New Jersey. Mark, tell me about backup quarterbacks.
I love the move. I think it's a great move. Everybody, the fans that are bickering or just looking at a stat sheet and just seeing what's on the surface, and that's what's underneath the water. That's what I said before. He brings a lot to the room, to the sidelines. AJ already talked about him showing some stuff. If fans act like there's, you know, 10-year Pro Bowlers out there on the street, there's not.
Right.
But for what this guy is, and you hear about the work he did with Blake Bortles during the Chicago-Jacksonville game, the footwork, and that's something that the coaches have talked about with EJ, I think it's great. Because that's what the role Cobb was supposed to fill last year. And the injury to Manuel, to Cobb, it was just decimated. And they didn't even play Toole in the last game because of it. It'll help Jeff Toole as well. I think that's overlooked. So it's a great move, in my opinion.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Some good points there. Yeah, I mean, they talk about Jordan Palmer as if he's a coach on the field. And he doesn't necessarily reject that. We're going to hear his comments here in a second. He does not reject that characterization. I think he probably wants to be a coach someday. I think he could serve as a mentor to EJ. But you also got to be ready to play. And that's going to be a challenge, I think, for him to be ready to play on Thursday against the Lions. And he's going to play. And as the season goes along, and you need a backup quarterback who is not just a mentor and a backup quarterback who is not just a good guy in the room. You need a backup quarterback who can play a little bit on the field as well. And that's the question we're asking. Is he that guy? Greg in Florida, your thoughts on the Bills' backup quarterback spot?
Hey, how you doing, John?
Great.
Good. You know, what's funny, when Mark Sanchez was, you know, released, I was really hoping we were going to be able to get someone like him, you know, a game manager, again, somebody, a veteran. Jordan Palmer, exactly, thrown 15 passes in the NFL. I don't know if they got him specifically because he played with the Bears, and can get a little more in depth on what their, you know, mindset is, you know. But I was going to ask you, John, how about a guy, let's say like the Eagles. I don't know if they're going to keep a guy like maybe Matt Barkley, but do you think that there will be somebody possibly that we might be able to trade maybe a third or fourth round draft pick to get someone like that?
Would you do that, really, especially knowing what you know about next year's draft, the Bills without a first rounder now? Would you do that to get essentially quarterback insurance like Matt Barkley? I don't think I would. I wouldn't want to part with too many more draft picks at this point from next year's draft. Would you?
Well, it depends. I mean, like, if you look at a guy like that and you really see the potential, you know, because I don't know about Jeff Toole. I still have a funny feeling that he might be a practice squad player at best. So I think in the back of their mind, they are looking, they got their veteran, hopefully, but I really think that they're going to be looking at the waiver wire or trying to make some sort of a deal.
Yeah, I don't think that situation is settled yet. I don't think the backup quarterback spot is 100% settled, and the head coach said as much today. Thanks very much for your call, Greg. Taking some thoughts on Twitter, too, about the question on the table. What would be the ideal backup quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, and is that guy on the roster right now? David tweets in, Tool needs to start, period. Clinton Oliver, 2016, someone better than EJ so he can be on the bench where he belongs. Not going to happen, folks. Not going to happen. John Howell, a veteran who is able to start, someone who's already been a franchise quarterback or still could be. How do you find that guy right now? How do you find that guy? You can't. A veteran who is ready to start, someone who's already been a franchise quarterback, I don't know how you find that guy. Daryl Jones, I think this is a real good move to add a more backup quarterback. The Bills should not have waited so long. This will help EJ. That's a fair comment, I think, waiting this long. But at this point, I don't know how you go out and find a backup quarterback who's started in the league and has had, you know, good experience in the league and excelled in the league. Justin Hine tweets in, Tool is our guy. More competition at backup quarterback would boost Manuel's game. We've talked about this a lot. I don't think EJ's the kind of guy who needs a push from behind. I don't think motivation is not his issue. Hard work is not EJ's issue. That's not his issue at all. There's a tweet. They need a real veteran backup for Manuel, someone who's been there and has been in situations that can mentor him. Well, it appears that Jordan Palmer would be a mentor, but he hasn't been there very often. He hasn't had a whole lot of playing experience. One of his games, actually, was against the Bills, 2010. The Bills had a big comeback victory in the 2010 season at Paul Brown Stadium against the Bengals. Carson Palmer started. Jordan Palmer came on in relief of his brother, believe it or not, in that game. One of the rare NFL appearances for Jordan Palmer. Mark in Buffalo. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hey, Mark. How are you tonight?
Great.
You just said it about 2 minutes ago, I heard you. The fans, you're going to have to live with E.J. Manuel unless he gets hurt. They're committed to him. They're going to try and win with him. They're going to have a real good running game. The offensive line's going to get better once they get some continuity together. So fans, live with E.J. So you know what? It doesn't really matter who you bring in as a backup unless he gets hurt. And you know what? Jeff Toole threw the interception against Kansas City. The kid's got a lot to learn. I think if you want to bring in a veteran to help him out, that's fine. But you're going to have to live with EJ. He's what they've got. They're going to ride that horse, and it could mean their jobs. But they're going to give EJ every chance they can. So for the backup, I really don't care, Murph.
All right, thanks, Mark. I think you're absolutely 100% accurate about that. EJ is the guy, and they're going to ride it, and it could mean jobs, I guess. We'll see. But EJ's the guy going into the season. I mean, they said that. I remember they said that to us at the Senior Bowl, third week of January. So here we are 7 months later, and that has not changed. So there you have it. I mean, backup quarterbacks. What do the Bills need at backup quarterback? And what would you want at a backup quarterback for EJ Manuel? Give us a call, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Coming up tonight, Corbin Bryant, backup defensive lineman who had a pretty big game against Tampa Bay. He'll be in studio with us. Mark Kelso joins us at 8 o'clock to talk about what he's seen in preseason, and we'll let him weigh in on this quarterback issue. And at 8:30, we're going to talk fantasy football. Maybe you've had your draft already, maybe you haven't, but the season is here. Jamie Eisenberg, who is the fantasy football expert for CBSSports.com. He'll be joining us at 8:30 tonight. A couple of news notes. The Bills have claimed and were awarded punter Jordan Gay, who, as we said, punted and kicked off for the Carolina Panthers. Jordan Gay is 1 year experience in the NFL, signed as a free agent by the Giants back in January, was waived 4 months later, went back to Carolina where he originally signed as an undrafted rookie free agent and was just let go on Sunday. Jordan Gay comes in to compete for a kickoff specialist and who knows, maybe even for a punting job with the Buffalo Bills. Jordan Palmer is a Buffalo Bill. The news that came out, leaked out last night, made official by the Bills today. Jordan Palmer, the veteran, former sixth-round pick of the Redskins in 2007. The Bills released Thad Lewis. Head coach Doug Marrone talked today about Jordan Palmer and what the thinking was to bring him in today.
We've given ourselves an opportunity, meaning that, you know, we've given ourselves an opportunity for what we've been watching on tape of everyone, for Jordan to come in here and show us what he has. And I think that, you know, that's something that obviously Doug and I have talked about quite a bit. You know, the scouts have done a good job, you know, going through it. And I think it's more of an opportunity, and we'll see how it goes, and a process, than it is, you know, where are we right now.
How much did Jordan's experience with Elite 11, Trent Dilfer's camp, where EJ Manuel was a member,
right,
and also with Blake Bortles back in California, how much did that coaching experience factor into the decision, Simon?
Yeah, I at least for me, I didn't know about that till after we claimed him. I didn't know that EJ and him had worked together. I didn't know that he was helping those guys, you know, at the Elite 11. I didn't know that till after the fact. So I thought it was pretty good.
How much of a benefit can that be, having Jordan in the room for EJ?
Well, you know, EJ's his own player. I think what's important is that we are trying to upgrade that position, you know, in case something happens. We want the best player available at that position. So I'm not too concerned about, you know, the relationships or anything like that. Obviously, to a certain extent, you know, you don't want to put two people in the room that don't really like each other. But, you know, hey, if they work together, that's great. And, you know, but if not, and that's the next best player that gives us a chance to win, that's what we have to do.
Head coach Doug Marrone, who says that he plans on playing Jordan Palmer as much as he can in the Thursday night preseason game against Detroit. Palmer later stepped to the podium and was asked about getting ready to play, how difficult it will be to get ready to play on Thursday night against the Lions.
Playing quarterback in the NFL is difficult. So I don't think this is, you know, it is a unique experience, but at the same time, I was in a similar situation last year. I got called in and, you know, about 8 days before the last game, and I started the last game, and then I got called back on bye week, and the coaches were on vacation for 4 days, and I had to get ready for Monday Night Football to be the two. And so I've been in similar situations. I feel very confident in it, and just in the brief time I've spent with this coaching staff, these guys are on it. They know it. They have a knack for being able to teach it and explain it. So I think I'm in a great position to go out there and try and move the chains a little bit.
What are you looking for your role to be with this football team?
You know, right now I'm really focused on Thursday night, trying to get as much of the playbook as I can, trying to get an understanding of who these guys are and where they're going to be, and get the play called right and get the ball to the right guy, whether it be a pass or a run, and move the chains. And so I haven't really spent a minute thinking about past that. I just need to come out here and be locked in on Thursday and perform well.
Jordan Palmer, quarterback, signed by the Buffalo Bills today. He's going to play Thursday. It's a tough spot. And you can imagine how much, I mean, nothing against Jordan Palmer, but you can imagine how much they're going to cut down the playbook and cut down the call sheet for the calls they'll make with a guy who just walked in the door on Tuesday, 2 days before the game, hasn't had a chance to practice much, let alone dive into the playbook. But he will play Thursday night against the Detroit Lions. The other roster move today, we told you about the signing of the punter claiming off waivers, and the Bills also put Kiko Alonso on the active non-football injury list. I'm sorry, he was on the active non-football list. Now he's on the reserve non-football injury list. Means he no longer counts to the 75, and it is expected he will not suit up this season. Not practicing today, safety Jonathan Meeks, cornerback Mario Butler, guard Chris Williams did not practice today. And Chris Williams, it's not a problem, but Coach Marrone admitted today that he's concerned as the regular season approaches that Chris Williams has not been able to practice now for a while. And he's also saying that He's feeling pretty good about where Cyril Richardson is. He says Cyril Richardson's going to be a starter in this league. He's probably going to be the starter on Thursday night. Lee Smith also missing practice for another day with the toe injury. So you're caught up on the Bills anyway. There's other league news today, but let's get your thoughts on the quarterback situation, the backup quarterback situation for the Buffalo Bills. 803-0550 is the number to call. David in Rochester. Hello, David. You're on the air.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Great.
I'd like to talk about our quarterbacks, Coach. You know, we got two backups that, you know, neither one are fit to be a backup quarterback, and EJ's regressed. And I'm looking at Tom Downing's resume, and, you know, his claim to fame is coaching Matt Stafford, who's got Megatron to throw to, you know. And I'm not all that impressed with what Stafford's done. He's got, you know, got the 5,000-yard season, but if you look at the Detroit record, you know, he hasn't done all that great. Now, all of a sudden, you know, he comes in, and I don't know if it was some kind of deal with, you know, Schwartz becoming defensive coordinator and bringing in his own guys and getting him a job.
No, it's not that.
I'd like to ask Coach Marone if, you know, he's looked at somebody, you know, that's actually worked with quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, Todd Downing has worked with quarterbacks, and I disagree with your assertion that EJ has regressed. I don't think he has. As difficult, people are not going to like this. I don't care. As difficult as it may be to believe, I believe, you don't have to agree, I believe EJ Manuel is pretty significantly improved over where he was a year ago. I'll just let that sit out there for a second, because I do believe that. I do believe that. He didn't bring it to the game Saturday. Didn't bring it at all. He did not play well Saturday. Around him, people didn't play well. Offensive line, penalties, et cetera. Receivers not getting open. We'll talk with Kelso about this. But I believe, and I don't expect anyone to say you're right, I believe EJ is significantly further ahead than he was a year ago. I disagree that he's regressed. And I think Todd Downing's done a pretty good job with EJ Manuel. I'll just let that sit out there for a second, because I know people are, some people are driving off the road. Let's go to Gordon. Gordon in Buffalo. Hi, Gordon. How you doing?
Hi, John. How you doing?
Good.
I agree with you, John. I think EJ has improved myself. I did not like the way that he played on Saturday.
Nor did I.
He was late. He was late.
Yep.
Whatever. My family was saying, well, you don't throw it downfield. Well, they won't open downfield, so he had to check it down. But he still needs to. His accuracy needs to improve.
Yep.
As far as the backup situation go, I don't believe Tua is the guy. I think he is very inaccurate. Yes, he has improved a little bit, but his accuracy, especially on deep throws, is questionable. If you look at it, and you know, in the first and second season, he tried to throw the ball deep for a touchdown. He got intercepted both times. So I think his accuracy is worse than EJ's. So I don't think he's the answer at backup. I like that new guy, that the Parma guy that he said for a mentor, but I don't think he's the answer either, because he has no game experience. If EJ gets hurt, we are in trouble at quarterback.
All right. Thanks very much, Gordon. Let's take one more call here in this part of the show. Tony in South Carolina. Where in South Carolina are you, Tony?
Yeah, right in Columbia, South Carolina.
Oh, excellent. Home of the Gamecocks.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was calling about. You know, hopefully we got EJ as our future. But when we look at the backup situation, John, I got to say, with all the hoopla that's been going on in Cleveland, Connor Shaw, rookie quarterback, just got placed on their practice squad. He'd be a great pickup. I've been watching him for the past 4 years. I mean, when you look at talent, the ability to lead a team and ability to win games, Connor Shaw's a diamond in the rough. And that's my comment out there. I think he's got a lot of future ahead of him. And I sure would love to see the Bills get him into their backup situation.
As a developmental guy, though, right? I mean, you're not going anywhere with Connor Shaw this year, correct?
Absolutely. No, not with Connor Shaw this year, but a developmental guy, you know, hopefully EJ pans out. But if for some reason not, this guy's going to have a lot of talent behind him.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call, Tony, from South Carolina. We appreciate it. So, again, we'll revisit this issue. We'll talk about quarterbacks and what should the Bills be looking for when it comes to a backup quarterback for E.J. Manuel. And let's agree that E.J. is a starter, because whether you like it or not, he is the starter. And nobody said anything other than that. I'm looking at Connor Shaw. It's 6 foot tall, 6 foot three-tenths of an inch. So not particularly tall in stature, but we'll see. I'll do more research on him. I haven't really thought about him. All right, we're going to take a break here on the show. We're going to get back to your phone calls, and we're going to be talking with Mark Kelso at 8 o'clock. We'll take phone calls for him. Jamie Eisenberg will join us at 8:30. He's a fantasy football expert for CBSSports.com, and we'll take calls for him. You may have your draft coming up this weekend, and he's got some thoughts on sleepers and fantasy football busts and breakout players, etc., guys to look for in your draft. Jamie Eisenberg at 8:30 tonight. Fantasy football expert. But coming up next, Corbin Bryant, who may have had a breakout game of his own on the defensive line for the Buffalo Bills this past Saturday against Tampa Bay. He'll be in studio with us when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live tonight at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. And as the Bills get set for the final preseason game of the year, we're joined in studio by defensive lineman Corbin Bryant. Corbin, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You won high praise from Coach Marone just the other day when he talked about how he thought that was your best game. Did you notice that he said that about you?
No, I didn't. You know, I just see myself going out there, working hard, you know, for my teammates. So that's all I'm ever worried about.
When did you realize that you would start last Saturday against Tampa Bay?
Just right before the game. You know, I was thinking about it, you know, when, you know, Kyle didn't practice, you know, he went down with a little leg injury. But, you know, I kind of thought I would. But as soon as I saw Kyle in the locker room, he talked to me about some things, and I knew I would start the game. But, you know, I'm always ready for that. You know, I started two games last year, so it's not a surprise to me.
What, how much further ahead are you from where you were a year ago at this point, at the end of training camp a year ago?
Well, I feel like I'm a lot further ahead, you know, because, you know, playing a lot last year, it added a lot to my knowledge of the game and, you know, knowing what teams like to do to defensive linemen, you know, whether I'm at defensive tackle or, you know, whereas I played defensive end a little bit last year. So just learning a lot about the game and, you know, and that's how you become better, knowing what people are going to do to you, snap in, snap out.
And tell me about the learning process here where you've, you know, you've undergone a couple of different defenses now. How much different is this defense from what you had here a year ago?
Well, you know, it's a different mentality. We're a lot more attacking this year, whereas last year we were a lot more, you know, blitzing. So, you know, we're pretty much playing within ourselves on the defensive front. But, you know, football is football. A lot of the things we did last year are similar to what we do this year. So it's just a lot of the terminology is different, but a lot of it, you know, football is all the same. Everybody does the same things. It's a copycat league, as everybody knows. So
tell me about Pepper Johnson, what he has meant to your group and what kind of a coach you find him to be.
Man, he's a great guy. You know, I think he's a player's coach. You know, he's all about playing together. You know, he's all about, you know, teaching us about the values of the game and why we play this game. And, you know, when you know those things, you're going to, you know, want to play the game with a higher purpose than getting a paycheck.
He speaks from experience, I think, you know, with his Super Bowl experience and his years with the Patriots. When he speaks, I think guys would have to listen based on what he did in his career.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, whenever, you know, somebody comes around that's won a lot, you know, he commands respect. So, you know, whenever he speaks or whenever he's explaining a play to us or some type of offensive scheme that they're trying to do on us, you know, everybody, you know, has their ears to him. And, you know, we're trying to do what he wants us to do because we want to have the same success that he did.
Corbin Bryant is our guest, Bills defensive lineman. How many years in the league for you now, Corbin? Is this your third?
This is my fourth.
Fourth year in the league.
Yeah.
Coming out of Northwestern, did you anticipate this kind of career path that you would have?
I felt like it would be better,
yeah.
You know, first coming out, you know, at a draft as a rookie, but, you know, I was undrafted, so I had to, you know, climb up the ladder, and I'm glad that throughout my career I've been able to be around a lot of great guys that have been able to teach me about the game, so I'm blessed to have been through that.
This time of year, cutdowns, we're right in the middle of the two big cutdowns, it's got to be kind of, I wonder if you're kind of reflective on where you've been and what you've been through and maybe the persistence that's required to hang in there and stick on a roster like you have here.
Yeah. It definitely, you know, but I'm always going to have the hunger that I've always had, even when I was a rookie trying to, you know, make it when I was in Pittsburgh. You know, you never want to be satisfied in this league because, you know, there are always guys coming in, you know, trying to take your place. So if you're always hungry, you know, like you're, you know, an undrafted free agent, you know, at the bottom of the totem pole, I think, you know, you'll always have success.
Was there anybody that you sort of emulated maybe in Pittsburgh or your time here in Buffalo, any players, veterans that you thought that's the way to do it, that's the way to make yourself into an NFL player?
Well, you know, when I was in Pittsburgh, you know, I always, you know, looked at guys like, you know, Kiesel and, you know, Aaron Smith when he was there when I was a rookie, you know, and always like, you know, when I came here, you know, I always look at the guys that play a lot, like Kyle, you know, Marcel, Mario, you know, those guys will always, you know, give you a lot of good pointers on what to do because they've played a lot in this league. You know, Mario's played 9 years, Kyle's 9 years, you know, Marcel's first round pick been playing a lot. So, you know, those guys have been through war. So when you talk to those guys, you know, they won't steer you wrong.
And those guys, if you look at them, I mean, Marcel and Mario, first round picks, Kyle was like a fifth or sixth rounder, and you come in as an undrafted free agent. So you get kind of different perspectives, I would think, as far as hanging around in the league and making yourself valuable to a team.
Yeah, and definitely. And what I've learned, you know, being in this league, it's, you know, not where you're drafted, it's what you do when you get there. You know, it's a lot of guys that first-round picks only played maybe 1 or 2 years. Right. You know, there have been, you know, guys like Kyle, fifth-round pick. You know, he can play as long as he wants, you know, because he's, you know, one of the best players, you know, in the league. So it's all about what you do when you get there.
What do you think the secret is for a guy like Kyle or maybe a guy like you to hanging around, being on a roster?
This is about hard work and learning the game. You know, this the NFL, you know, it's all about, you know, learning what guys are doing to you. It's not about, you know, flat-out talent. A lot of guys have talent, but you have to be able to learn the game and, you know, play within the system and know what guys are going to do to you. And when you know that, you can be, you know, you can have more pluses than minuses out there on the field on game day.
Where do you find you do your most learning, game day or practices or film room?
Oh, definitely practices and film room, you know, because if you don't, you know, practice well, what you do in practice is what you're going to do in the game. And, you know, when you look at the film, you know, you look at, you know, things like line splits and, you know, what plays they run on second down, what plays they run on, you know, third down. If you know those things and they click in your head, you know, teams aren't going to change that much. So on Sunday, you see maybe 1 or 2 plays they like to run on second down. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah. My broadcast partner on the games on Sundays, Mark Kelso, who played in the league, has written a book about how football players at all levels should watch film. And he maintains that guys, a lot of guys, maybe don't know how what to look for when they watch film. Do you find that to be the case? I mean, do you find that maybe you got a way of looking at film that other guys might not possess, especially young guys?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of guys, sometimes they just look at the film to look at players like, oh, look at you know, Kyle Williams,
yeah.
Look at Marcel, look at the way they play instead of, you know, looking at, you know, the offense they were playing, you know, Detroit. Look at, you know, number 75, look at, you know, number 70, look at their splits. If their splits are tight, they're going to run away from you. If their splits are wide, they're going to, you know, double team you or something like that.
Where did you learn how to watch film?
Well, I learned it in college. You know, in college at Northwestern, our coach taught us to take notes and, you know, and to look for things that can give us tips on what they're going to do.
And are the tips pretty blatant? I mean, is it do most teams kind of tell a little bit about what they're going to do based on what you can see on video?
It's a little harder in the league, but, you know, at times when it gets deeper in the games, the guys start getting tired. It gets a little blatant.
And you look at it that way as the game goes along. In what, late-game situations, you're going to look at it a little bit differently than early?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, because guys are, you know, getting a little tired. They want to get a little in the advantage, so they may get a little more inside or get a little deeper on their pass pro or something like that.
Corbin Bryant is our guest, Bills defensive lineman, as we talk about the game coming up Thursday night against the Detroit Lions. Corbin, you did play last year on a defense that did a lot of good things. I mean, a defense that had takeaways and a lot of sacks. Is that kind of production possible this year with a different style of defense you guys are playing?
Oh, yeah, definitely, especially, you know, with the talent that we have up front. I believe if we, as a defense, we stay healthy, we're definitely, you know, one of the best defenses in the league. It shows last year we were number 10 in defense coming from the year before. I think we were maybe 30th or, you know, 29th, something like that. So if we continue to stay healthy, we have all the talent in the world, and we have, you know, great coaches that are going to show us the way to, you know, to stop things, like stop the run and, you know, on third and long, you know, get off the field.
Stopping the run has worked pretty well for the first team defense. I think Coach Marone had the stat yesterday that first team defense has given up like 2.6 yards per rush. That's very, very good, especially based on where you were last year.
Yeah, definitely. That's tops in the league. But, you know, we know we have to continue to work. You know, this is only the preseason. You know, when we start against Chicago, the live bullets are going to start flying. So we're going to really have to buckle down and every play go after it so we can reach the goal that we want to reach, which is making the playoffs first and foremost.
Have you guys started to look at Chicago and started to, you have, like, look teams against Chicago in practice, that sort of thing?
Oh, no, not yet. You know, we're just, you know, trying to iron out the things from, you know, the Tampa game. And we're looking at a little bit of Detroit for Thursday. But we'll get started on Chicago right after that.
Corbin Bryant, our guest, Bills defensive lineman. Corbin, tell me about what you like to do off the field. You've been around, you know, town here for a couple of years. How do you relax when you're not away from football?
Well, you know, I like to travel in the off season, you know, not really, you know, overseas, but, you know, places like, you know, Houston, San Diego.
Where are you from originally?
Well, I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
So in the off season it's cold.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to get out of there. You know, I like to read, I like to exercise, obviously, but, you know, just the simple things. I'm a pretty simple guy when it comes to hanging out and in hobbies and things like that.
What do you like to read?
I just read a book called The Lone Survivor, Marcus Luttrell.
What's that?
It's about, you know, the guys they went over to Iraq. It was just about, like, 5 Navy SEALs.
Okay. Yeah. So, and that's the kind of thing you like to read?
Yeah, yeah, about, you know, war and all that stuff.
So. When you were growing up in Chicago, did you always have your eye on Northwestern?
Oh no! You know what? The funny thing is, like, I didn't know where Northwestern was when I was being recruited by them. I didn't know like
you know
anything
how close
about
it, was.
It. Yeah, you know, until they you know came to my high school and you know I was able to go up there and visit. But
how far away was it from your home?
About 45 minutes.
Okay, a little farther. Were you thinking Big Ten all the way? Is that what you were?
Oh,
looking
Oh yeah, definitely. I had a lot of you know MAC schools, smaller you know offers. So why not take on the Big Ten and get on the big stage?
Yeah. What made it Northwestern for you? What sealed the deal for you to go to Northwestern?
Well, definitely the academics. You know, yeah. Because you know obviously everybody wants to go to the pros, but you know everybody you know isn't afforded the opportunity. So I was able to go there, stay there for 5 years, get my bachelor's and my master's degree. So when I'm done playing football, I can, you know, do something else.
What kind of degrees you have?
I have a degree in organizational change. That's my bachelor's, and I have a master's degree in sports management and marketing.
What are you going to do with that? What are you thinking?
You know, maybe getting into intercollegiate athletics, you know, being maybe working my way up to being an athletic director of a college or something like that. You know, just dreaming big.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I have a lot of friends who work in that field, and actually I was playing golf with a couple of them this summer. And I asked him this question, where do you think big-time college sports will be in 5 years? Things are changing. You probably follow this. Things, you know, with the O'Bannon case, with a couple of other rulings and a couple other things going on, things are changing in big-time college sports right now.
Yeah, definitely, you know, especially with players trying to get health benefits.
Yeah,
and
at Northwestern.
And, yeah, maybe, you know, even
unionized, right, at Northwestern.
Right, and maybe even getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, especially when I was in college, we didn't get enough.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of, you know, the month, we were, you know, we had no money in our pockets. So,
right. It's not right. I mean,
yeah,
on the face of it, it's not right, especially
yeah.
when even the Northwesterns of the world or any Big Ten school is raking in multi-million dollar TV deals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Big Ten network's huge.
Yeah, but it's hard to do. You know, it's easy to say, okay, pay the players because they're bringing in revenue, but it's a lot of things that go into it that say, no, we can't do it, so.
It seems like that's the direction it might be headed, though. And some, you know, not, I think it was just a couple weeks ago when the NCAA allowed the big conferences to make their own rules. Some of them, probably the Big Ten, are going to start getting more money to the players. And I would think that's the way to go. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if these players are bringing in the revenue, why not give them a little bit extra so they won't, you know, be struggling at the end of the month so they can, you know, get themselves something to eat, buy themselves some clothes. But like I said, I'm indifferent about the situation, so who knows what's going
to
happen.
What did you think about the effort to unionize at Northwestern? Did you know anybody involved in that or talk to anybody?
Yeah, I'm good friends with Kane Coulter. I mean, he kind of kept things, you know, on the hush, you know, from that standpoint, but I was with him on that. I think that, you know, players deserve, you know, he wasn't going as much for the money, but just for health benefits, you
right.
know, because when guys graduate, sometimes they don't, you know, keep their benefits, and, you know, they may need a surgery or two, and the school may not take care of it. So
it's going to be interesting to follow. Last question for you. Thursday night, Detroit Lions, how much do you want to play? How much do you need to play, do you think, to get ready for the Bears?
I'll play as much as coach needs me to. I'm ready. Like, I'm in great shape. So whatever they need me to do out there, I'll do it.
Corbin, great talking with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Corbin Bryant, Bills defensive lineman, our guest, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
What an interesting guy Corbin Bryant is, huh? Intelligent guy, a couple of degrees already from Northwestern University, no slouch, and a good player. You know, Doug Marrone said it yesterday. He had his best game, I think he said it, with the Bills in that preseason game against Tampa Bay. Some pretty good depth on the defensive line, even without Alan Branch. Corbin Bryant, I think, has showed us something. Welcome. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO here until 9 o'clock tonight, a couple of days away from preseason game number 5, fifth and final preseason game. Bills and the Lions, the game is blacked out. It won't be on TV live on Thursday night. It's a 7 o'clock kickoff on Thursday. The radio broadcast will be live right here on this station. 7 o'clock kickoff with pregame coverage on most of these stations starting at 4 p.m. If you got to see it, it'll be broadcast on a tape delay basis in Buffalo on Channel 7, WKBW-TV, 7 o'clock on Friday night. In Rochester on WHAM-TV, Channel 13 in Rochester, 7:30 on Friday night, tape delay. Also on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel Saturday, this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. So a couple of chances to see the game on tape delay, but you can listen to it as it unfolds with our call, myself and Mark Kelso, Thursday night at 7 o'clock right here on most of the stations. So we're looking forward to that. Hey, The Bills made an announcement today, and I think it's kind of gone under the radar a little bit, but it's pretty important. 47,482. You know what that number is? That's how many season tickets have been sold this year. Team President and CEO Russ Brandon tweeted, the team has sold more season tickets for this year than it has in any year since 2009. 47,482. Just 3 years ago, the season ticket number was 37,555. They sold 36,000 back in 2001. They had eight consecutive seasons of selling more than 42,000 tickets leading up to 2011. And here they are right now at 47,482. That's an increase of about 5,000 season tickets over last year. Isn't that cool? Amazing by the fans here, by the way. Just an amazing demonstration of faith and loyalty. And I'm not kidding. I mean, we know the record, you know, 14 straight years without playoffs, dissatisfaction. People have questions. We hear them every night on this show. People have questions about the direction the team's going in and the quarterback situation. And yet, 5,000 more people plunked down money for season tickets this year than did a year ago. That's amazing. I think it's amazing. I think it's great. Believe me, I don't take it for granted. I think I can speak for just about everybody in the building. We don't take it for granted. When I looked out there in that brand new refurbished stadium on Saturday afternoon and the sun was shining and all those kids were in the stands and it was a pretty full stadium Saturday afternoon, a sellout with some empty seats, I thought these people are amazing, amazing support for this football team that admittedly has struggled mightily over the last almost decade and a half. So kudos to Bills fans. 47,482 season tickets sold, 5,000 more than a year ago, 10,000 more than 2001, right? No, 10,000 more than 3 years ago. 3 years ago, 2011, there were 37,000 season tickets sold. You know how many season tickets the team sold in its initial year? Jay Harris, want to take a guess? First year, 1960, brand new American Football League. Nobody knew what they were looking at. War Memorial Stadium. How many season tickets do you think they sold?
500. I'm guessing.
5,000.
5,000.
5,200. That's not bad.
Jeez. Why'd you ask me that?
I don't know.
Terrible.
You weren't even close. No. All right.
Well, you guessed 47,000. I thought you were going to mention the pizza logs sold here, but you said season tickets. So I was off there.
Are you talking original pizza logs?
The original pizza logs. Okay. We can't do that. We can't give plugs like that.
All right. Coming up next hour, when we return, we're going to be talking with Mark Kelso, my partner on the Bills radio broadcast. I don't think he does a lot of video review for preseason, but he did for this game, the Tampa Bay game. I'll ask him why. I have a feeling he was troubled, like most of us, by what he saw from the Buffalo offense in Saturday's game. And Mark, usually when he is troubled by something, he does what most smart people do. He goes back again and reviews what went on. And I think that's what he did. And we're going to talk to them about that, what he saw in the Bills-Tampa game, what he's seen in preseason, and what about looking forward. Mark Kelso, our broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network, coming up next. We're going to talk about fantasy football at 8:30 with Jamie Eisenberg from CBSSports.com. You can phone in your fantasy football question for him coming up at the bottom of the next hour. A break right now, then we're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
You ready for me to get started? I'm ready to bite.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show here until 9 o'clock tonight. We're 2 days away from preseason game number 5. The Bills and the Detroit Lions Thursday night, 7 o'clock kickoff here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. Pre-game coverage on this station, and most of them starts at 4 p.m. and kickoff at 7 with myself and my broadcast partner, who I spend a lot of time with this time of year. So you may ask yourself, why would you want to talk to Kelso on the radio show when you're going to spend 3 hours, 3.5 hours with him Thursday night? Mark Kelso joins us live on the line. Hi, Mark. How are you? Are you sick of me yet? Four games
not
in?
Not at all, buddy. I'm just doing up some boards here.
You're
at the Detroit Lions. I can't wait for the excitement that was in your voice for that clip. sick of this preseason. I know. I imagine how the players are, because I'm tired of it. And they've been at it every single day at Fisher. And,
yeah.
And the new surroundings are great, but I'm sure they're really tired of the preseason.
Yeah, I might not get that worked up Thursday. But there's something I want to ask you, because your level of preparation is legendary, Mark. We all know that. But I don't think I've ever seen you come in and watch preseason game video. And you were in here yesterday doing that, watching the Bills and the Bucks. You don't often do that, do you?
Yeah, no, not too often. Because, the preseason is all about evaluating talent and young guys trying to make a team. It's not about schematic things. And you're not engaging this strategy that you're going to engage offensively or defensively. Generally, you're just playing base defenses because you want to see what the skill sets are, the players that you have in the building, and who ultimately is going to make that 53-man roster. But, occasionally you like to come in, and certainly when there's a performance like the other night against Tampa in the first half and people are all upset and what's wrong with the offense and EJ is struggling. And I need to watch film too. I mean, I can tell an awful lot on game day and when we're up there in the booth, but you can't tell all the little nuances and who's responsible or why he made a throw or didn't make a throw until you go and evaluate it on film. And so, in order to give an accurate assessment and give everybody, a fair opportunity to see exactly what's going on the field, you need to go in the film room. And that's kind of the reason I did it. Because I have some really good things to say about EJ too. But there are some things he needs to do better. There's no question. But certainly what happened the other night in the first half was only a small part of that was his fault.
Mark Kelso, our guest, the color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, will be calling the game with him Thursday night, the Bills and the Lions. So if you have a comment or a question about that game, about the upcoming game, last week's game, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. But let's drill down into that, Mark. What went wrong? Let's start with that. What went wrong with the Bills offense in the first half against Tampa Bay?
Let's start with this. Number one is they were extremely vanilla. I mean, they weren't going to do anything other than run the zone read. They ran some what they call U-press when the offensive tackle and a tight end will block down, and the near guard, which means the guard where the play's going, will pull. And a couple times that was Eric Pierce, and he hasn't been in that situation very often. So they ran that play. I mean, they didn't really run any counter cutback. They ran a little bit of outside zone play, too, where they have the offensive lineman trying to engage the defensive lineman, and then the running back's taking an outside track, and he's just kind of find the hole where it appears. I mean, a couple times what Tampa was doing then, too, is they were spilling those linemen. So they're outside linebackers because they're playing 4-3 with mostly cover 2. So they're playing – their outside linebackers are coming up and taking the inside shoulder of the guard, and that allows their middle linebacker to run over the top. Now, that's difficult for guys that haven't experienced that before, which Eric Pierce hasn't experienced that much, and nor had Cyril Richardson, which he was in there in place of Chris Williams, who we thought might get the start, but I'm not sure what the issue was with his back. So, and that takes some time to get used to, and that unit, that offensive line unit, needs time to work together to be a contiguous unit, and oftentimes they were not. I mean, one time Tampa Bay rushed 6. We had 6 blockers, 5 linemen and tight end. Actually, Scott Chandler stayed in on that play, but 3 blockers went to the right, and there were only 2 pass rushers on that side, and the other 4 pass rushers were on the other side, so we had 3-3, and they had 4-2, so one guy comes free. And now, that's just an assignment there, probably because those guys have not played together for any length of time. That's the only modest concern that I have, is that group won't have a ton of time to play together before opening day in Chicago. And that unit needs to be cohesive in order to be effective offensively.
When you speak to how vanilla they were offensively, I keep thinking back to how often they ran plays out of I formation, like a standard, 21 personnel package I formation. I told you yesterday, I'm guessing it was probably 2/3 of the time. I can't imagine they'll run regular season offense like that much anyway.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. I mean, there's going to be some pre-snap movements, which didn't occur. I mean, they're going to have guys in all kinds of different positions, even if they are in an I formation. A lot of times the other night, like you said, the fullback, Frank, was right in front of the running back. that he wasn't even in a strong or a weak formation, so there'd be a strong back, so there'd be offset eye, so he'd be to the strong side or a weak side eye, which means he's over to the weak side, you know. And they want to see what guys can do. They want to keep things simple. And again, part of the reason is because they know Chicago's going to be studying that film, and they certainly didn't want to do anything that might give the Bears defensive unit an opportunity to prepare in advance for what the Bills might do on opening day. There are some things they can certainly do better. There are some throws EJ made that were terrific, and there were some throws that he needs to throw better, and he threw to the wrong hip or the wrong shoulder or didn't let the down extend itself long enough for the pattern to come available. And sometimes it was receivers that would play from a soft jam position, so about 4 or 5 yards off, the corners would for Tampa Bay. They'd come down on the snap, and as you mentioned, a lot of the times we're playing with 21 personnel, so you only have 2 receivers. So they come down and get their hands on the receivers. EJ drops back, and then by the time they escape, it's 3 seconds into the down, and he's looking to get rid of it. Nothing's downfield. He throws a check down. But a number of times that was because there were no receivers open downfield when he thought that time had expended itself and he got rid of the football. So, I mean, they've got to give him early opportunities or opportunities early in the down as well to create separation and allow him to throw the football when they're open early.
But Mark, EJ, there's so much focus of attention on any quarterback. EJ, it seems, in particular. I'm not going to tell you there were people with, you know, torches and pitchforks here, yesterday waiting to get at EJ, but there's a certain segment of fans that didn't like what they saw Saturday and put it all on him. It's not all on him, is it?
Well, yeah, no, not by any stretch of the imagination here. I mean, I'll give you a few plays that I think. I'll even give you some plays that I think he executed extremely well, and I'll tell you some things that I think that, you know, he worries about and some things that he might be doing, I think, just because it's preseason and he's in the preseason and in practice, you want to try to execute things with perfect form, with perfect footwork and doing everything the right way. But when the game comes, you want to be able to exercise your athleticism and some improvisational skills. And those are some things that, you know, that I think that he'll do come game time, but he's being overly focused on doing things in the way Coach Downing wants him to do it and working on his footwork, working on his arm slot and where he's throwing the football, things that when the game comes, he'll just use his athleticism and just let things happen and play the game and don't think about it so much. So, I mean, there's a couple of throws. Like, there was one throw in Woods. I think it was an outside route, and he throws a perfect ball to Woods because they ran that little whip route a couple times. Williams ran it twice, so they go down and run an inside hook, and then once they run the inside hook, they just slide to the outside. And the reason they do that is because the cornerback, generally, they see the track that the receiver's taking, and they're going to attack the inside hip, so they just slide to the outside. Gives them a little bit of lateral separation, and the quarterback's to deliver the ball on the outside shoulder and the outside hip. So one time he does it perfectly to Mike Williams, and it's a completion. The next time he throws it on the inside hip, he's supposed to throw on the outside hip. That's on EJ. But, Mike runs a good route, but that one's on EJ. Now Robert Woods does the same thing to the right side, and EJ throws a perfect ball, but Woods slips coming out of his break. So, I mean, it looks like an incompletion, and people are saying, well, he didn't throw the ball where he was supposed to. No, that ball was exactly where it was supposed to be, but the receiver, because he lost his footing, wasn't able to get to that spot. So, and there were times, there was one time when I think that was a throw to Woods across the middle, about a 15-yard in pattern, and he throws it on his back hip. And the reason he threw it on his back hip is because he got pressure, because Chantrell had a Chandler on his right side. The defensive end was all the way outside Chandler. So now the defensive end rushes from a wide nine. Chandler releases for the pass, and Chantrell blocked inside. So nobody touches the defensive end. And now EJ's under pressure, and instead of backing up a little bit, which I think he would do and use some improvisational skills, he steps into that throw, but he gets hit right as he's throwing it, and now that's on the backside of Robert Woods and falls for an incompletion. So there's, I mean, you can't really put that on EJ. I mean, he tried to get rid of it. He saw the guy that was open. He made the right read, but they got forced to throw before he wanted to because of the pressure from the defensive end.
Hey, Mark, when you talk about EJ just needing to use his athleticism more, et cetera, I've heard critics contend that He plays like sort of in a robotic fashion. Is that fair, do you think? Is that an accurate way to describe sometimes the way that EJ plays?
You know what? I would say that right now he's being a little bit more robotic than he needs to be. He has terrific athleticism. Let me tell you the play. Now there are some plays that he really made, okay? So when the play that he throws to Mike Williams over on the Tampa Bay sideline, that's a Ben Roethlisberger type play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he escaped. He had pressure on his right side. He escapes to the right side because it's a little running window. He sees Williams open downfield about 17 yards. He throws that ball on the run with velocity over the defensive back who's underneath in front of the safety who's over the top. And Williams, you know, tiptoes on the sideline there and makes that reception. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that E.J. Manuel's capable of. And I think he's being a little bit robotic, but I think it's by design because he wants to do everything right in the preseason because he's working on his footwork. Guys don't want to throw off their back foot. You don't want to throw off your back foot unless you're forced to throw off your back foot, because if you get in the habit of doing it, you're going to be inaccurate. And he wants to work on his accuracy. And he's, and again, I don't think he's just letting it go and playing this with the freedom that he would if he wasn't concentrating on all those things. And I think when the regular season begins, he forgets about those things when game time shows up. I mean, you still work on those in practice, but when game time shows up, you can't think about your footwork. You can't think about stepping into every throw. I mean, you have to let it go. You have to believe what you see. And I think that's exactly what will happen. I think he's made progress this offseason. And again, certainly all the situations that occurred from an offensive perspective in the first half the other night were just partly his fault. You know, there were a lot of other people that shouldered the blame for different plays.
Our guest is Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. We'll be calling the game for you Thursday night, 7 o'clock kickoff, the Bills and the Detroit Lions. One thing, Mark, let me just switch gears to the other side of the ball. We asked a question on the show last night for callers to chime in on. The Buffalo Bills run defense, if you think about, you know, they're giving up 2.6 yards per rush, the first team defense through four preseason games. If they haven't fixed their run defense problem from a year ago, it certainly looks like they're on the right track. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, defensive linemen, these guys use their hands really well. You know who impressed me the other night, too, and who had extended playing time was Gordon Bryant.
Yeah, we had him on the show a half hour ago, yep.
He was great. I mean, using his hands and his escapability at the line of scrimmage, and then, you know, he's been a guy that I think has had a really, really fine preseason. And Jerry Hughes has, and here's the thing about Jerry Hughes, he has done some really great things against the run this preseason. He's had a couple great rushes from the edge, but I don't really think he's focused on that because that's his skill set. I mean, that's his sweet spot is rushing from the outside. So he's been focusing on controlling offensive tackles or controlling tight ends and squeezing the edge so that he creates a limited space for that running back to run up into, and he's been doing a great job of that. And so, you know, I think in Jerry's, it's a similar to EJ's situation. He's been playing really well defensively, but he's working on parts of his game that he knows he needs to improve as the regular season unwinds. I mean, we don't have to worry about him rushing off the edge, man, because he's going to bring it. But what we do need to worry about is him working against guys that are much bigger frame in offensive tackles, and can he squeeze that opening? And he's demonstrated that he can do that extremely well. So, again, I think guys work on certain things in the preseason that they're not going to work on during game time in the regular season. They're just going to let it go. And the run defense has been great. There's a couple reasons to that. Even without Kiko Alonso in there, I mean, Brandon Spikes is as instinctive a linebacker as the NFL has. I mean, he just understands what's happening and can make plays and understands when he has the opportunity to run through if a guard pulls and when he can't run through because it would put him behind the running back. And then Nigel Bradham it's going to be a shame he's going to miss opening day because he's been playing terrific. And the only time they've had runs the other night, the only time that they had a few opportunities to create some space in the run game is when guys try to do too much, because one time, what they were doing with Brandon is they're lining him up a little deeper. So Nigel comes and takes that fullback on, and he goes underneath the block and forces the running back outside. But then he engaged the blocker and realized the running back's going outside, so he tries to go outside and make the play, but Spikes was already there. It's ready to make the play. And then I think it was, who was the running back? Martin, I think, cut back inside.
Yeah,
cut back inside and got a few yards, but That's just maintain the integrity of your defense. That's just a guy trying to do too much because he had already sealed that inside running lane. So, I mean, there's guys that have been playing really well inside, and then defensive backfield is starting to get some continuity as well now, and I think starting to figure out what they're going to do and what collection of people they're going to put on the field. And let me give you one more example. So, yeah. I think there was I wouldn't call it a critical third down in the preseason, but there was a third down situation that I think Mike Evans caught about an 8 or 12 yard pass reception from McGowan, and it was over on the defensive right side, and it looked like he was pretty open. Stephon Gilmore was close. I can't remember who was playing safety at the time, but the Bills played a 3-3-5 in that situation. They had three down linemen, they had three linebackers, and their nickel package, and all three linebackers dropped. So they dropped eight into coverage, and what happened is they didn't have good leverage points. The linebackers weren't sure exactly where they needed to be, so actually no one was where Evans was. I mean, they were all almost between the hashes, all three linebackers. One of those linebackers should have been just on the inside hip of Evans, and then that play wouldn't have occurred. Now, that's something I don't think the Bills did a lot of last year, and something that they will intend to do this year, particularly if they're going to be an effective blitzing team and then drop eight occasionally. And that's something they'll have to solve, but they haven't done it much in a game-like situation. So the other night they're doing it, not because they want to stop a third down. Obviously they want to stop the third down conversion, but they want to execute the defense that they're going to have to execute in the regular season.
Yeah, I would think that goes towards preseason experimentation a little bit, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to work on certain things that you feel that are going to be part of your offensive or defensive packages without giving things away and without alerting the opposition in the regular season to what you might do to settle in on a particular strategy on game day. You know, when you're preparing for a particular opponent, because the Bills have done nothing offensively other than vanilla. Honestly, I mean, you think Nathaniel Hackett's not in there every day drawing up? I mean, he's got so much stuff ready to go and drawn up that it's ridiculous. But he's certainly not going to show it in the preseason because he's got some dynamic weapons, and you need to find guys that can do simple things right as well. But I think they've got a lot of things dialed up for Chicago on opening day that will create some problems for that Bear defense. But certainly, they don't want to alert them to that this early and, you know, before the preparation time. Right. But the modest concern is the offensive line and having the five guys that are going to start on opening day make sure they get enough quality time together so that there aren't any of these situations where they slide protection one way and the running back goes the same way, so someone's unblocked, or they block too many guys to one side and they leave a free guy open on the opposite side. So those things can't occur and expect to win games come the regular season.
All right, so what do we got dialed up for Thursday night, Mark, this final preseason game? What are we going to talk about? Should I bring in some recipes, or you want to talk about recipes? Or
please, bring something in, because I have no idea. Here's what I would do. If I were a fan.
How should fans watch this game Thursday night?
I'd pick a couple guys. I'd pick a couple bubble guys, whether it's on, you know, I think there's probably a couple bubble guys on the defensive line. I mean, the secondary seems to be pretty secure. I don't know that there's too many questions there. The offensive line is certainly, there's going to be some guys that they're still on the roster that might not make the final roster. And I would pick out one or two of those guys, and I would just watch them every play, quite honestly. I wouldn't watch the ball. I mean, you might, if you expand your vision a little bit, you watch the ball and that player. But watch what they do and watch the efforts that some of these young guys expend to have an opportunity to make this team. Because you don't get many opportunities in the preseason to make a play. I mean, you might, as a player, get five or seven chances. And if you make four, if you play four of those seven chances well, you have a chance to make the team. And if you play two of those chances well, you probably don't have a chance to make the team. So the margin of error, and the margin of success is so slim. So I'd watch particular guys and guys, again, that you think are on the bubble. I think there's some interesting things going on at the receiver position. I really think they're going to keep seven, but that means they can only probably keep two tight ends. And are they only going to keep two tight ends? I don't know the answer to that. So You know, only the coaches do. But it would be interesting to watch those positions and watch the guys, the energy that they're going to expend in this game to make sure they do everything right for the time that they have in the game.
Well, you make a really good point, and I'm going to remember that both the next few days and then into Thursday. Guy, no matter what we think of this final preseason game, there are going to be guys out there playing for their lives. And you know what? I respect that. I honor that. We should remember that. I should remember that. I'm not lecturing you. I'm lecturing myself. I'm not lecturing you.
Yeah, but you're right, because I didn't even play my last preseason game in Philadelphia. I mean, they cut me before that, but that was the week that they decided to cut all the remaining defensive backs on the roster who weren't going to make the club. But you're playing your heart out, and you don't know. I think one of the reasons that I got signed in Buffalo is because of the preseason game I played with the Eagles in Cleveland. And Bill Polian got a hold of that film, and I made a bunch of plays in that game. And you know, and then they bring you in, and they say, well, you know, the guy made a bunch of plays. He was a good player in college. Let's see if he might be a fit here, or see if what we saw on film is accurate with his athleticism and what his strength level is and all those things. So then these guys have an opportunity to get a couple good films and some good plays, and then maybe catch on with another club. And that's exactly what they want. They just want an opportunity to play somewhere, obviously, hopefully in Buffalo, but if not here, perhaps somewhere else around the league.
Great, great point. Mark, we'll talk to you Thursday night. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Look forward to it, guys.
All right. Mark Kelso, my partner on the Bills broadcast. You can see why he's good at what he does. Look at the detail work that went into looking at the preseason game, the Tampa game. A lot of good explanations there of why stuff went wrong. And it did go wrong, no question about that, from an analytical standpoint. Not analytics, but an analytical standpoint of what went wrong with the Buffalo offense in last Saturday's game. And a really good point at the end, I thought, about the guys who are going to be out there playing for their professional lives. I mean, you know, say what you want about the final preseason game. It doesn't count, obviously. It won't matter in the standings, but it'll matter. It'll matter to a lot of guys who are on that field trying to put one last-ditch effort out there to put something on tape that might make them a pro football player. A really good point by Mark Kelso. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to switch gears and talk about fantasy football when we return. Jamie Eisenberg is the senior fantasy football writer for CBSSports.com. If you have comments or questions about your fantasy team, maybe you're approaching your draft, maybe you've already had it, maybe you're going to make some changes on your roster, now's the time to phone him in. For Jamie Eisenberg from CBSSports.com, their senior fantasy football writer, 803-0550, the number to call. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're just a little bit less than 2 weeks away from the start of the Buffalo Bills regular season. As you know, Sunday, September 7th. A couple of days before that, what a week from tomorrow. Right, the regular season begins with NFL Thursday Night Football. The fantasy football season is here as well. And joining us on the line live, a gentleman who keeps track of fantasy football as well as anybody in the country. He is a columnist and on-air reporter for CBSSports.com, their senior fantasy football writer. Jamie Eisenberg joins us again. Jamie, thanks for coming on the show with us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Where are most people as far as their leagues? Have we had drafts? Or is this weekend a big weekend for drafts? Where do you think most leagues are at this stage?
Yeah, this is heavy draft season right now. It's this past weekend, this weekend coming up, all throughout the week. I'm literally minutes away from doing another draft, which seems like my 150 millionth. But this is when, you know, people have time to get it done. It's, you know, they try to squeeze it in, and certainly next weekend with the holiday weekend, it's a big draft weekend.
Why do you do so many drafts, Jamie? What, I mean, as a professional, why do you have to do them just as a matter of course, or?
Well, yeah, they're the ones that I've been doing for years with my friends and, you know, family members and things of that nature. And then they're the ones that obviously you represent your company and your industry. We do drafts, you know, within our own, you know, CBSSports.com to help the public. And then for whatever reason, we end up playing out all of them.
Yeah.
So some of them can be fun. Some of it's tedious. You know, you obviously have the ones that you care about a little bit more than the others. But, you know, when it's your job to do fantasy football drafts, you're never going to hear me complain.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. Believe me, I love every minute of every draft that I do.
Jamie Eisenberg, our guest. He's a senior fantasy writer for CBSSports.com, and you can phone in any fantasy football questions you might have as you approach your draft, 803-0550, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I laughed out loud at your tweet today. I think it was today, and you said, fail, drafting Malcolm Floyd when you meant to draft Michael Floyd. I would imagine those kind of mistakes are fairly common these weeks right now, huh?
Well, it's funny because most people don't do live drafts anymore. And so I had two leagues where one is everybody shows up, and one league it's about 8 of the 12. And so it's hard, obviously, to keep up. You know, when there's a lot of talking going on, food, all that stuff. And so I had actually drafted Michael Floyd probably around round 5, and then a buddy of mine thought he was getting a steal of the draft when he said, "Yeah, let's take Michael Floyd." It's actually two brothers that share a team. And got really excited, stood up, "Yeah, Malcolm Floyd." And I was like, "Wow, that's interesting. I haven't seen my Malcolm Floyd get drafted. What do you guys, because I like to ask people when they make picks for my job,
yeah.
What do you guys see about Malcolm Floyd?" And they're like, "Well, he's going to be great for the Cardinals." I said, "I think you got the wrong guy there, buddy." So, things like that do happen. I got a few funny responses about last year. I think it was Josh Morgan and Josh Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one that got confused, apparently, for a couple of people.
That's funny. Here's a call for you from Kyle in Buffalo. Kyle, you have a question for Jamie Eisenberg tonight.
I do, and thanks for taking my call. Jamie, PPR league, get it, two keepers. Just wondering which two you would keep. Standard league, Joy Bell in the 15th, then instead of the 14th, Le'Veon Bell in the 10th, or Gronkowski in the 3rd. Thanks for taking my call.
Did you get all that, Jamie? Did you hear all that?
Yeah, he needs two of those. I think it's 100% Joique Bell. That's like a free pick. And so if you can get Joique Bell in the 15th round, that's a no-brainer. And then, it's tough to look at Le'Veon Bell right now because there's a little bit of a downgrade on him, but I still think the value is very good. The value is good for Gronkowski also, but that's kind of where he's being drafted, is in that round 3 range. You factor in the keepers, he's probably going to be bumped up to round 2. I probably would go the safe route, go Le'Veon Bell, and definitely go Joique Bell.
I want to ask you, Jamie, for those of us who are not deep into it, like some of our callers are, when you talk about value, in fact, I saw that you rated the Cowboys' Tony Romo as your top value quarterback. What do you mean by that, and how do you measure value? Why is that important?
Well, it's just a matter of where you're getting your bang for your buck. You know, so if you're drafting, let's say, Peyton Manning in the first round, and then the rest of your team is somewhat mediocre, obviously it's going to be great with Peyton Manning, and you're probably going to get a lot of good picks throughout the draft. Does that stack up your team better to somebody who loads up heavily on running backs and receivers and then takes a quarterback like a Tony Romo, maybe a few rounds earlier, like a Matthew Stafford or a Matt Ryan or something along those lines? You know, it's where you're sort of comparing the value of that quarterback versus the value of the running backs or receivers that you could get at that particular spot. And so it's not necessarily a fair comparison when you're talking, quarterback versus running back, because you never know how that's going to play out. But a better comparison would be somebody like Ray Rice versus Bernard Pierce, or even in your situation, C.J. Spiller versus Fred Jackson, where you're getting C.J. Spiller probably in that round 3 or round 4 range, or Fred Jackson in that round 6, round 7 range. Well, if it happens like last year, clearly the value is obviously going to be in Fred Jackson's favor because the production's better and you spend a later pick. But if it's close and the production's similar, which is what I would expect this year, then you're going to get better value out of taking Fred Jackson later and taking somebody else in that 3rd round who could be a little bit better for you.
Here's a call from Joe in Buffalo for Jamie Eisenberg as we talk about fantasy football. Go ahead, Joe.
Jamie, thanks for taking my call tonight. I'm in an 8-man PPR league. Number 2 pick, my buddy told me he's taking Adrian Peterson. Who should I build my team around?
Well, it's hard to talk people out of Adrian Peterson when you get him stuck in your head because you know what he's been, you know what he's capable of, and that's a guy that has defied odds once already in his career. Why can't he defy age and wear and tear and all those things? I think Adrian Peterson's a superstar. But if it's the 1st or 2nd pick, I'm taking Charles or McCoy. I think those two guys proved last year what they can do. They should be great again in their respective offenses. So if you're stuck on Peterson, it's an 18 league. You're going to get great players throughout. You can afford to pass on Charles and McCoy, and you never know how it will work out. For my team, I would probably go Charles 1, McCoy 2. And if you're picking 2nd, you get your pick of whoever's left over.
Thanks for your call. We're with Jamie Eisenberg, senior fantasy football writer for CBSSports.com. You can phone in your comments and questions over the next few minutes here for Jamie, 803-0550, the number. Or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We got a caller tweet in a question, Jamie. Why does the scoring system still place so much value on running back when they are undervalued in the current NFL? That's from Todd.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the scoring system, because no matter how you score your team, whether it's standard leagues, point per reception, 4 points for passing touchdowns, 6 points for passing touchdowns, you know, you can change the scoring system however you want. The reason running backs are valued, especially at the top of the draft, is because there's so few workhorse guys anymore. The NFL has definitely become a passing league. Running back as a position has been devalued. But if you're able to get a guy who's going to touch the ball 20 to 25 times a game on a consistent basis, that just makes your team that much better. So it's not a bad route to take two wide receivers with your first two picks. You know, there's this theory being floated out there about not taking running backs until the fourth or fifth round. I don't know if that's a route I would particularly want to go, because I'd like to get a running back who I know is going to be heavily involved. And again, there's a small number of those guys. I would rather take my chances at trying to find the next Alshon Jeffrey, the next Josh Gordon, the next guy who I can get with a mid to late round pick that could be a tremendous value pick. Now, you could say the same thing about running backs, because we saw last year Zach Stacy wasn't drafted. He was fantastic. Fred Jackson was a late round pick. He was fantastic. It goes both ways. But the receiver position, because teams sometimes, for the most part, play three of them, it's easier to find players at that spot than it is to find key running backs. And so if you get those guys early, it definitely makes your team just a little bit better.
Hey, Jamie, I was reading some of your stuff recent weeks. You mentioned that C.J. Spiller, the Bills running back, there may be a tendency by some fantasy players to overdraft him. What are you thinking there? Why would that be?
Well, it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that the coaching staff in Buffalo, and you guys obviously could speak to this more than I can because you're very intimate with it, that they don't use C.J. Spiller probably to his best value. Now, maybe they don't think he's that good. Maybe they don't think he can do everything that a running back in the NFL is capable of doing, which means catching the ball and working at the goal line. Or maybe they just trust Fred Jackson a little bit more in that regard. But I think if you gave C.J. Spiller, like we saw in 2012 when Fred Jackson missed six games, if you gave him the opportunity to be a three-down back, to do everything that he potentially could do, now that he's healthy, you know, because last year he had the knee injury coming into the year, the ankle injury, which limited him all season, I think he could be special. But it's just a matter of can they allow him or will they allow him to do those things. So taking him in the third round right now, that's just not worth it. You know, if you get him in the fourth or fifth round, great value pick. But clearly right now the value, like I said, going back to earlier, is with Fred Jackson. If you're counting on Fred Jackson at 33 years old to make it 16 games, which he did once last time in the last 3 years.
I think one more call for you here, Jamie. Carl in Clarence, you're on the air. Carl, go ahead.
Hey, guys, great show. I do have the number one pick, so I'm going to put a gun to your head. Is it McCoy or Jamal?
Right now at 8:43 Eastern on Tuesday, August 26th, I'm taking Jamal Charles. You know, unless this foot injury is something that's going to linger, which as of now it doesn't. He returned to practice. I just trust in Andy Reid. I trust in Jamal Charles. I saw it last year. I think it's going to happen again. So I'm confident he's going to be great.
Thanks for your call, yeah. Carl. Hey, Jamie, you mentioned all the leagues you play in, and many people play in more than one league. Can you enjoy it if you're playing in multiple leagues? I mean, isn't it A, tough to keep track of, and B, don't you find yourself rooting kind of at cross purposes with yourself from time to time?
There definitely is are those negatives attached to it, understandably so. But, you know, when my paycheck says, here's what you get paid to do for a living, like I said, to me it's fun.
Yeah, but not just you. Like, what about regular guys who don't get paid to play? I mean, what's
then they're getting into it, you know, at their own accord. I think, you know, if you're a fantasy football junkie, I've actually wrote a story about somebody that played in 55 leagues, which I couldn't even imagine. And that's, an average Joe. That worked a 9-to-5 job. I don't know how he managed to do his job and manage his fantasy teams. But, you know, if you're that much of a junkie, you're obviously competing against yourself because the players you have are going to be overlapping.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you love it, you love it. And that's how you, you make your hobby and your free time.
That's great stuff, Jamie. We thank you for taking – I know this is a very busy week for you, these couple of weeks. Maybe we'll check with you later on in the season. Thanks for being with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Jamie Eisenberg, he is the senior fantasy writer for CBSSports.com, their fantasy football expert, columnist, and on-air reporter. You can check him out at CBSSports.com, their fantasy football coverage, anchored by Jamie Eisenberg. You can tell he knows his stuff. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO tonight, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Jamie Eisenberg talking about fantasy football with us tonight. Great. Boy, he knows his stuff. We'll get him on again during the course of the season. Great to hear his takes on fantasy football. Let's hear from you about anything we've talked about tonight. We've got a few minutes left here in the show. The phone line's open, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We began the show a couple of hours ago talking about backup quarterbacks. What should the Bills be looking for in a backup quarterback. What do you think? What would be the prototype backup quarterback, the guy to back up E.J. Manuel this year? 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What makes this today's issue is the news of the day here from One Bills Drive, the biggest news of the day, the Bills releasing backup quarterback Thad Lewis and signing a new quarterback, Jordan Palmer. One time a Chicago Bear as of Sunday, who was released, former draft pick of the Washington Redskins in 2007, spent time with the Bengals, the Jaguars, and the Bears, a 30-year-old native of California who played in 2008 and 2010 for the Bengals. 15 pass attempts, 2 interceptions in 4 games, one of those games against the Buffalo Bills, as a matter of fact, in 2010. Jordan Palmer met the media today and was asked by my colleague Chris Brown, how much carryover from previous offensive systems does he see in this Buffalo Bills offense?
It's early for that question just because I've only been in the playbook a little bit. I haven't seen everything yet. But, yeah, there's absolutely carryover conceptually. You know, I always think of this is my – I haven't even added it up. I think it's my 6th or 7th NFL system I've learned. But I always say it's kind of like a language. If I say, hello, my name is Jordan in Spanish, I'm saying in Spanish or I'm saying in English, I'm still saying, hello, my name is Jordan. You know, we're still having a guy run here, guy run here, guy run here. We're just calling it something different. So there's definitely carryover from the concepts. And as I get further in the playbook and get to learn this a little bit better, I'll have a better understanding of what carries over and what doesn't.
Jordan Palmer, you can tell, very articulate guy, very bright guy, and a guy who knows a lot about playing the position at quarterback. He's been an instructor and a counselor at the Elite 11 quarterback camp for developing quarterbacks for the last several years. He ran into E.J. Manuel in that camp a couple of years ago, working with Trent Dilfer in the Elite 11 camp over the last several years. He is regarded by many as sort of a coach on the field. Even so, he was released by the Chicago Bears on Sunday. And he was asked today about that. Is he a coach on the field? Does he consider himself that? And does he want to be more than that, just regarded as a coach on the field?
I think it's a role I'm comfortable with. I think is the best quarterbacks I've been around, particularly the guys who are backing up, you know, they're leaders, but they're really servant leaders. I got to see it with Josh McCown last year, seen it with Chad Henne, and then all the way back to Mark Brunell when I played in Washington. And so those are the guys who I think provide the most resources for their team, for the starter, for the staff, for the receivers, whoever it be, may be. And then when they do get an opportunity to play, those are the guys who take advantage of it and play well. So starter, backup, I don't think about it in those terms. I'm here to serve and help the guys around me. And I know that that will make me a better player in the process. And whatever that means, it means.
Jordan Palmer, has anybody ever articulated the role of a backup quarterback better than that? Ever? All time? Has anybody ever come close to articulating the role of a backup quarterback better than that? He sounded like he was describing Frank Reich, quite frankly, who many of us regard as one of the greatest backup quarterbacks of all time, a servant leader. He said he saw it last year, Josh McCown backing up Cutler in Chicago last year. He was there to witness that. This quote blows me away. Those are the guys, talking about backup quarterbacks, those are the guys who I think provide the most resources for their team, for the starter, for the coaching staff, for the receivers, whoever it may be. And when they do get a chance to play, those are the guys who take advantage of it and play well. Has anybody ever articulated this is the job of a backup quarterback better than that? Here's a call from Mark in Hamburg. Hello, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi, John. I just wanted to express about the backup quarterback position. I'm really looking forward to watching Detroit because I want to see Kellen Moore. He's sat on the bench for 3 years, you know, learning his trade. Hasn't been able to get into a regular season game behind Matthew Stafford, but he's a guy who didn't get drafted because of his size or his lack of size, but yet holds all the NCAA Division I records. So I'm kind of interested to see how he does and, you know, if he might not land a spot somewhere.
Didn't he play? Do you remember the preseason Lions preseason game here in Buffalo a couple of years ago when he was a rookie? He played in that game, right? Do you remember that? I do.
Preseason, yeah.
Yeah, preseason. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I know. Yeah, yeah. But he does come with a lot of fans. I know that. A lot of people love Kellen Moore for what he did in college at Boise State, right? Boise State, right? And a lot of people love
him. Yeah, I think, you know, that probably, you know, stands against him, you know, because, you know, he wasn't playing, you know, the major college.
Yeah, but they had good teams
but
when he was there.
I just think a guy like him certainly deserves a look with his college record, you know.
Yep. All right. Well, you probably will get a chance to see him. I haven't seen what the the Lions' plans are for this Thursday. In fact, one of our guests tomorrow night, Jim Brandstatter, is the color analyst on the Lions Radio Network. We'll talk with him. Maybe he'll have a better clue as to how they're going to use their quarterbacks on Thursday night. One more show to go before the game on Thursday. That's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and hope you join us then. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Pete Cargis, our engineer, Jay Harris, our producer, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Be back tomorrow night at 7, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.